And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. One of the things I love most about this town and about the campus on the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill are the forests that are a part of the life in our town. And the person who, more than any one person, has made me appreciate and understand the great gifts that we have is Ken Moore, who now is the – what are you, the assistant director emeritus, the associate director emeritus of the North Carolina Botanical Garden, or are you just –
You can say that. They call me different things from different
times. What do they
times.
Call you down there?
I think, well, some of them say, oh, here comes Ken. This is great. Others said, oh, my God, here comes Ken. Let's just go the other way. So, I retired from the garden officially several years ago. But I go down there a lot. And and lots of folks, periodically, the garden and many of the individuals who keep the garden, make it what it is, the personalities of the garden, they show up from time to time in the floor column on the in the Carborough Citizen, because every time I turn around, I have a reason to reference what's going on down there. And particularly one of my favorite places, in addition to the campus, is Mason Farm Biological Preserve. Mm-hmm. And so,
well, all over. And we'll talk about some of those things. I guess what many people know you who don't really know you, but they see every week in the Carborough Citizen your front page column on nearby plant life, often on native plants, about plants that we see all the time, but we never noticed before. And you notice them and have a picture of them and describe them and tell us about their history.
Exactly. And I think when they came to me earlier, at the beginning, I said, no, I don't have time to do this. And after 1 week, I was driving around. I said, wow, there's something neat. There's something neat. And so it became very infectious for me to just want to share what's right all around us. And like, for instance, you don't need to travel outside of our local community to see just wonderful scenes, have wonderful experiences. For instance, just recently, I was highlighting the Adamasco fields that are outside of town.
I have no idea what an Adamasco field is.
It's a lily field. You know, the lilies of the field.
Are you saying that these are native plants, or are these just that people have planted that kind of keep going on?
Oh, no, these are all wild native plants. Because I remember back in the 60s when I was running around with William L. Hunt, who is the guy who got me moving over from my degree in English to botany and working in the outdoors. He used to take me around and show me, well, like where Eastgate used to be. And
where Eastgate is, and there used to be.
Well, I mean, yes, right, right. I'm thinking where Eastgate, if we could do away with Eastgate, there would be a meadow. Some people call them rain lilies. Some people call them, particularly from the mountains, colorway lilies. They're the white lilies that come up, stand about a foot about a foot high, a single lily on a stem, sort of a cup shape, beautiful white, turns pink, comes out pink bud, then turns white, and then as it gets pollinated or fertilized, and it starts fading again to pink. And they grow. They're in flower a couple of weeks ago, like mid-April. And there used to be acres of them all around Chapel Hill. Now they're essentially there are no wet meadows left, but there are a few, and there's one on the edge of town where it's a horse pasture, and horses won't eat the lilies because they're poisonous. So the horses are sort of like deer. The deer will sort of maintain a lily meadow because they won't eat.
They won't eat it, but they'll eat everything else.
They'll eat lots of other stuff. But there are other wildflowers coming along after the lilies go. But it was so much fun to take a few people out there the week after I had described this wonderful experience, and they stood there and just look. There were thousands. just thousands of lilies, and it's really wet. And the retired guy who lives there, he's an old Chapel Hill resident. He mows it, but he doesn't go out and mow it until late summer because he says, if I go out earlier, I get my tractor stuck. So that's perfect. So he's actually happy to work with the nature of that site. And in fact, his wife has him going out there periodically and cutting little buckets of lilies when they're in flower for a couple of weeks. And she takes them and she makes these beautiful arrangements for their church altar for the Sunday services. And I think one of the things, well, I'm lucky that I'm old enough now to remember Chapel Hill back in the 60s, and that wasn't really a long time ago, but so much of that's gone. And so I'm now able to, you know, I think what's wonderful about being old, I realized a year or so ago, is you're old enough now, you have stories to tell. And there's so many plant stories. And with the plants go the people and the animals. You know, you can't write about a single plant without describing a personality or an insect or a bird or something, because it's all interactive. It's, you know, a plant is related to something going on around it, with it, and plants rely on, like, the insect pollinators or the birds that eat the fruit that spread the seed. People, the persimmon trees, that old persimmon on campus is there because back in the early 1930s when they were clearing the Polk Place site, the local folks who were part of the clearing crew, they knew the treasure of a persimmon tree. And I can just imagine that. Yeah. So anyway, you got me started.
Now I don't want to leave this topic, but what I got you here to talk about, or at least one of the things, and if you join us late, I'm visiting with Ken Moore. Ken is known for many reasons right now, mainly because he has a front page column every week on local plant life in the Carborough Citizen, and it's a fantastic part of that great paper, with usually a colorful picture to illustrate, and as you talk about a story. But you got off on a topic that I'm interested in, and that is the trees on the campus in Carolina.
Wow.
And one of the things that you taught me first to begin to open my eyes to what's going on around me is on Polk Place, which is the part of the campus between South Building and the Wilson Library.
Right, yeah.
And this is, if you look at this part of the campus, it's really nicely organized because it's got two rows of oak trees, I guess, is sort of, it's like these oak trees are lined up in beautiful precision, you know, like soldiers marching. And they're all there. And then you look around and you see, first you see, there's one little outlier in the middle of that breaks up the regularity of this organized campus, and you start to say, what in the world? Cut that tree down so it's all regular. And you mentioned that there's a persimmon tree and that there's a story about why it's there. Now, you pointed the persimmon tree out to me and said, there's a question mark about why it's there. And then just a moment ago, you seemed to know the story. Have you made that up,
Of course, I made that up, but that's made up on, you know, other things you read and say. And one of the factors that are the reason for that my story about that Polk Place persimmon tree is, you know, periodically I'll lead a campus walk. I call it in the footsteps of William L. Hunt, because back in the early 90s, he started doing walks of the campus because he loved the campus. And he would talk about the old trees and particularly the evergreen trees. So he loved to do those walks in the dead of winter. And it was cold because he liked the hollies and the holly collections. He always talked about the personalities, the people who made the campus. You know, W.C. Coker, the, Francis LeClaire, the folks who we read about. Well, when I started leading those walks—
Sort of you're the successor. You're well, the disciple way. And the right. successor to right. Bill Hunt.
Right. Mm. Well, now there's sadness and happiness also because a lot of the trees and the specimens that he pointed out and talked about are no longer there for various reasons, because life does go on and things go and come. So I started getting really interested in the personalities and the history of the because I Margaret Schumann's you know, so many people don't even know about that book, the Walking Guide by Margaret Schumann, that was done back in the 70s. Well, little by little, and then you have the with Archibald Henderson's, that 1949 publication about the history of the first university, mm-hmm. the first state, whatever, I can't remember
yeah,
the title.
First state university,
then,
yeah.
When I started reading that for some of the stories, and then I think the key, William Powell's pictorial volume that I think came out in 72, and I think the more recent one was, it was not 1990, with that beautiful photographs. And one of the photographs that, and what I do in my walks is I have some of these photographs taken in the late 1800s and the early 1900s because I like to go with folks and let's stand here and let's take a look across that part. And you see that tree? Well, you, it's in the photograph. That's one of the original trees. That's so
still
exciting.
There.
Still there. Well, so as you said, that persimmon tree on Polk Place does stand out a little bit into the interior of that nice grassy park-like landscape with the two perfect rows of oaks on either side. Well, that's a curiosity in itself. Why was it left? Well, one of the keys is one of the photographs in that I use is this one. It is a view looking down in on the south side of South Building along to the east in front of all those new dormitories that were built in the early 1930s. And there is this was really curious. In the caption, it goes on like on 12 October 1921, the cornerstone was laid for the first of four new dormitories. It goes on. The last sentence of that caption for that photograph, the persimmon tree at the southwest corner of Caldwell nearly always produced a bountiful crop. And then in this photograph, you have all these brand new buildings, no landscape around them, but at the base of right on the corner of Caldwell, there is this huge tree, which is the persimmon tree that he goes out of his way to include in that caption. So, aha, there's a persimmon tree. It always bears fruit. Well, so it just stands to reason if they saved something there. I can imagine the local folks, maybe farmers, foresters, just good old folks who lived around Chapel Hill and the environs. Well, you persimmon beer, persimmon pudding. You know, Pete Ivey, every year in the Chapel Hill News, the Chapel Hill paper, there was always during, I think, October, there was always a story about Pete Ivey and his persimmon recipes. Persimmon is a really favored native fruit of North Carolinians. So imagine, okay, we're clearing all this wilderness behind South Building in the—
For an addition to the campus,
addition to the campus. Cleared it. Well,
they cut down everything.
It's like one
of these things where you bulldoze it for a parking lot or for a new Walmart or something like that. It was clear cut.
Well, let's say, here's a drastic, but you can visualize it. So, okay, we've got a whole new thing. We're going to redo the front of campus, so all the old buildings around McCorkle Place, very, very sacred place, and the university is dedicated. So this is just as an example, visualize. So, all right, we need to go clear that. So we're going to cut down all the trees, but we'll leave Davy Poplar because that's a sacred tree. Well, just imagine. So you need to clear the slate so you can do the construction. Well, here they cleaned the slate in the forest behind South Building because they were developing that whole row of buildings and Wilson Library at the south end. That
they left
singular
the
tree because they knew now it. Although I have seen a fruit or two on it, it's basically it's a male tree.
But now you're
and you need a male tree to fertilize the female tree,
which will be bountiful.
Right. So I'm given that those folks knew the importance of their.
So you made up the story, but you made it up on the basis of a lot of facts.
Oh yes.
We're talking to Ken Moore, and we're going to talk some more about some of the special trees on campus. We're not through, Ken, with the persimmon tree.
Okay, good.
You and I'll be right back.
There's some more on campus.
this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ken Moore. Ken Moore, among many other outstanding achievements during a long life, is now a regular weekly columnist on the front page of the Carrboro Citizen writing about local native plants, flora, trees, but, you know, more plants. But I want to talk about some more about trees. And I'm glad you've told us about the persimmon tree on Pope Place in the campus because I think that's become my favorite tree because before I met you and before you told me about this story of the persimmon tree, I walked down that walks between South Building and Wilson Library, conscious that I was in a place that is very nicely a nice lawn and nice buildings and nicely taken care of. But now I never walk or ride my bicycle through that campus without tipping my hat to the persimmon tree and saying this sets it off. Now what? So maybe we can come back to the persimmon tree because there's more to talk about. But
well, you're not the only person who honors that tree and does exactly that. Walk whether they're walking their dog across campus or strolling, they cruise by there and they honor that tree.
So if you're listening, next time you're on the campus, take just a minute to find the outlier tree from the regularity of the oak trees, and you'll see the persimmon tree, and join us in saluting it as you walk by.
And if you, for a dramatic experience, you go up and you hug that tree and you look straight up because there's nothing like that chunky bark and looking up at just do it.
Well, Ken, let's talk about some of the other trees on campus. You take visitors and people on these walks, and so I bet you learn a lot from them as every time that you learn something from somebody. But if somebody wanted to take a tree tour, they would, of course, want you to talk about the Davy poplar. You probably say, well, everybody knows about the Davy poplar, so I don't have to talk too much about that. But have you learned that people really don't know the real story of the Davy poplar? And poplars. Can I say that? The Davy poplars.
Yes, poplars. Right.
Tell us about it.
Well, let me say this. This has been something on my mind for quite some time, and that's the lack of awareness of the heritage of this campus, this university, and with it, the heritage of the town and the community that built up around it, and they're all interconnected. I think it is so sad that I think my sense is that most students who graduate now, they go away from here and they'll come back. They do not have a real respect for the heritage of this campus. I mean, it's a beautiful campus, and they might think, you know, where they had their, you know, perhaps proposed, some relationships developed here, certainly, or were maybe a tree that they sat under a lot just to just refresh themselves from indoors. But what I would love to do is I would love for the university to have a required course every student, before he or she graduates, will have a one-hour required course. Maybe the text would be that Archibald Henderson, the history, and then bring it up to date for the last several decades, so that they understand the personalities, you know, Wilson, Mitchell, all of these people, the fact that back in the the 1800s, what was Elisha Mitchell? I think he was a treasurer of the university. I think he was a preacher. He was a mathematician. He was, and we think of him as discovering Mount Mitchell.
First geologist.
Yeah. He's responsible for the origin of the, and showing the folks how to construct these dry stone walls. The history of single trees, like the Davy Poplar. Anyway, I just think that's why I
all right, well, we'll jump on that bandwagon, and I'm sure the kids will support another required course.
But
give
right,
us what
but
I want to
tell one
us,
hour, one
yeah,
hour.
All right, well, give us a little brief. Yeah. Would you start with the Davy Poplar?
We would start with the Davy Poplar because that's obviously
what
the
would
Davy
you tell
Poplar.
Us about?
Well, the Davy Poplar. Now that's one I can't make up a story. For that, well, I could, but I won't, because there are lots of stories made up, and I'm not sure there is a real anybody for sure. But what I've read is
all right, well,
not
I'm gonna...
definitive. But they, you know, Colonel Davy and the other folks who were deciding back in the 1790s that this is a place on this hill that we'll call Chapel Hill is where we'll have the state university. It was centrally located. It was a beautiful spot, the grove of trees. And the story goes that they had their horses or they were sitting. I mean, there are all kinds of stories, having sort of imbibing, what have you, having a wonderful drinking time. But it was near that old tree. Well, at that time, it was like maybe 50 years old. A 50-year tulip poplar can be pretty stately.
So this would have been in the 1790s. And the story is that that they picnicked under the site of where this fairly young tree of 25, 30, 40, 50 years old.
Yeah.
It's what we call a poplar or tulip poplar, yep. But more to that. And so the legend or the story has grown up that this is an important tree. But to me, Ken, the more interesting part of the Davy Poplar life is that there's this old dead tree, dead-looking tree, and it's been looking dead
ever since I've been here, and you've been
longer
here,
than anybody is alive. I mean, it's been quote dead for 100 years.
Right. It's very hollow.
How did it get dead, and why is it still blooming?
Some trees live longer than others. Some are very short-lived just by nature. Tulip poplars, there are some grand specimens, particularly Joyce Kilmer Forest in the western part of the state, the virgin forest, huge. I don't know, I said, 400, 500 years old, anyway, the poplar here on our campus is potentially plus or minus 300 years old. The university, certainly since the last half of the last century, from the 1950s on, the campus landscape people, the superintendent of grounds back in the early years of Francis LeClaire, they did everything they could to take care of that tree, which includes going up, I think, putting concrete in part of it stabilizing it, cabling it with these cable supports, wiring it to other trees and fertilizing it, and obviously pruning out dead wood. That's just for safety, if nothing else. It's obviously one of the special icons of the University of North Carolina, just like the old well. Well, so they're still hanging on to it. I was just up on campus because I was getting ready for talking with you about the campus trees. I knew this. Who knows where this is going to go when DG and Ken Moore get together and start, you know, because we love the trees so much. Well, I walked up there a little while ago, and the campus is gorgeous, and the McCorkle Place is in contrast to Polk Place, which is like a park-like.
Right, it's organized.
It's a 20th century landscape, very organized. Uh-huh. The McCorkle Place is the landscape typical of the century before. It's more of a naturalistic landscape. So you're looking at—
It looks like a forest.
Yeah, well, a very open forest, yeah. And some of the original trees are there now. Others obviously have been planted and are coming along. But standing there along Franklin Street, looking through that beautiful open forest landscape, there's this giant hunk. That midway, and it sort of goes at an angle. You think, wow.
It's like the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's, and in a way, as I was walking, looking back at it a little while ago, I thought, you know, there's just something about that image that just stabilizes this whole setting in the campus and our presence, and it just like gives it real meaning and solidity.
Yeah, you know, well, so. As you point out, it's been, I just say it's, when I came, I thought it would last another year. It was it was like we put this tree in hospice. You know, it's dying.
I love that.
But it just refuses to die. It's there. Yeah. But the other interesting part of the – as you pointed out, the part of the campus that goes from South Building to Franklin Street is not organized in the same way as Polk Place that goes from South Building to Wilson Library. Looks, the trees are scattered. It is more of a natural, but those trees, many of those trees have been planted, but it doesn't look that way.
Right.
But Davy Poplar was not planted. It's been there.
It's been there.
Now, but there are some Davy Poplars that have been planted.
Right.
Now, tell us about them and why they, what they are and what, where they came from.
Well, back in the late 1900s.
I'll tell you what, Ken Moore, I've asked you a question, but is signaling me that we need to take a break. So we'll come back and we'll talk about the Davy Poplars on the Carolina campus and other interesting trees.
That'd be fun.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. My guest is Ken Moore. Ken is currently most popular columnist for the Carrboro Citizen front page column. I'm very jealous, Ken, by the way. Get a front page column on a wonderful newspaper. And Ken writes about plant life, nearby plant life, usually native plant life. But we're talking now about the Carolina campus, and we've talked about a couple of the native trees that have survived the development of the campus. One is the persimmon tree on the Polk Place between the South Building and Wilson Library, and the other is the Davy Poplar between South Building and Franklin Street. And the interesting thing about the Davy Poplar is that there are now other Davy Poplars and that you need to look at when you visit the campus.
Right. Right. Well, the second one, and I'm looking at an old photograph of it says former UNC President Kemp Plummer Battle. And he was president during, 1876 to 1891. Well, he's standing. This is a wonderful photograph. He's standing there with his white beard and cane and top hat, black suit on the old, I mean, he looks like he's standing in the woods. And he's not far from the original Davy Poplar. And he says, this was in 1918, and he's standing by a little sapling. In fact, you can't even see the tree itself, the tiny tree, because it's sort of hidden between these three poles that are there holding it in place. Well, that was apparently a cutting from the root. It was like a little an offshoot.
Oh, cutting from the, it was cutting from the
it
root.
It was an offshoot from
an offshoot. It wasn't a cutting from, of a limb. It was a cutting of a root.
It was like the offshoot from the original tree.
So it's really a part of the Davy Poplar.
So it is
genetically the same.
It is definitely a part. It's called Davy Jr., and it is part genetically the same as the daddy tree. And so it's there, and it has a plaque, and it stands not too far. It's just on the edge of the shade of the Davy Poplar itself.
My made-up story, and I bet you can correct me and give me the true story, but that the Davy Poplar, as we can see and as you described, is damaged and dying. just doesn't die quickly.
Right.
But so that early as 90 or 100 years ago, people said we're going to lose this tree.
They were worried about it then.
Let's take care of that. So we've got the Davy Poplar Jr. Mm-hmm. And the Davy Poplar Jr. reminds me of Prince Philip. who's the son? Not Prince Philip, but of Prince Charles.
Yeah.
Prince Charles, who is aging, waiting to take charge. And so the Davy Poplar Jr. has been planted and is to be there to be the Davy Poplar successor when the Davy Poplar goes. But the original Davy Poplar just refuses to go, and the Davy Poplar Jr. has grown up, so it's bigger or as big almost, as tall almost, as the big Davy Poplar. But the Davy Poplar
it's not nearly that tall yet.
It's not nearly
that
tall
yet? You
need
to go take another look and look at it.
It's not as tall.
Oh, no. It's still sort of a young—
Well, you go take another look at it. I think it's pretty big. It's very tall. It's 90 or 100 years old. It's big.
Oh, well, I guess— It compared to the big one, I guess seems so inconsequential. It's a youngster.
Hey,
it's a 100-year-old youngster.
If y'all are listening, go look at the Davy Poplar and the Davy Poplar Jr.
And
you
Davy
all will tell
the third.
All right, what about Davy the Third?
Okay, Davy the Third. Remember, how many years ago we had the bicentennial, and they were looking for many, many projects, and one of the projects that we came up with, let's grow seedlings of Davy.
Why are you laughing about this?
Well,
this is a great project.
It is a great project. I think my understanding is that it was after the fact, it was considered one of the favorite projects of the bicentennial celebration.
So we've got a whole bunch of seedlings. These are not genetic duplicates, but they're from the Davy Poplar seeds.
Well, they are from Davy. And, here's the true story. We came up with the idea, let's have a seedling of Davy Poplar, a seedling of the Davy Poplar to give to a child from a selected elementary school from each one of the 100 counties. Well, this meant, planning in advance. We had to get the seeds. We had to grow them, germinate them, grow them for several years.
You said we. Did you have this project?
I think it was my idea. Then the Botanical Garden took on the challenge to produce it because the recommendation that came to us was, that's way too much trouble. Just go out and make an order of 100 tulip poplar trees from some nursery and give them out, and nobody's going to know the difference. But yes, some of us will know
Somebody
the difference.
Suggested that.
Yes. And I said, that was a very practical.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, with everything else going on, that's not right. We're going to be true to our heritage, and if we're giving these seedling Davy Poplars to school youngsters to take back to each one of the counties to spread the heritage of this university, it's going to be real. It's going to be
What kind of trouble was it?
The first fund, we had to get up and collect the seeds. You know, they have seeds and they blow in I think it was October. They come down like their little parachutes or helicopters.
Like maples.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so we went up there on campus to collect them one October afternoon. It was a beautiful day and they were ripe. And we had somebody from the university landscape. They climbed the tree to shake some branches, and we put sheets on the ground. So this would be simple. Put the sheets on the ground. I had garden staff and some volunteers there on the ground. And we'd shake the tree, and the seeds would just come right down. Well, what happened? They shook the tree, and a wind came.
Everything blew away.
Those little parachutes were just flying laterally. And so everybody grabbed the end of the sheet. We were running across campus with the sheet. It's like a giant.
captured the seeds.
We captured
at least 100.
Oh, we captured thousands of seeds, germinated them. And then the story keeps going. So we had like hundreds and hundreds of seedlings. And so I said, okay, great. And so one of our staff members, who's very, very practical, said, okay, well, let's pull out 100 and we're just going to grow those. I said, no, we have to have 100 perfect specimens in 3 years when we have this celebration. So we need to grow out probably 300. And out of 300, 300 or 400, I think we grew. So hopefully we would have 100 uniforms that pretty much look alike, but they were all different. But we wanted every child, because, you know, a child's not going to be happy if he gets a little tree compared to what his buddy is. So, you know, the bottom line is, after all of that effort, that we did have 100 uniform Davy Poplars. I think they were in gallon pots. They were about 3 to 4 feet tall, and there was so much fun. Each selected school had a representative. They were given out at a big ceremony. Each one came and got their tree, took it home.
There's more to this story the Davy Poplar the Third, I think, but Ken Moore and I have to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Ken Moore. And Ken Moore, I interrupted you as you were telling the story of the collection of seeds for the Davy Poplar the Third, which is part of the Bicentennial Collection. But take us back to the campus. You saved one of those trees to plant. McCorkle Place.
That's right. There's a Davy Poplar the Third that was planted right across the walkway from Davy Jr. And within the first year, I think that tree was vandalized.
Yeah,
I mean, really brutally.
So you'd saved.
Well, we had a few extras.
So you planted. This is not so the original Davy the Third.
This is not.
But he has the same name.
This is a twin brother. I mean, no, you can't twins. This was a multi. I mean, there were there were hundreds. They were all seedlings. So genetically, they were all part of the original tree. But each one had a little different. But they were like, you have a family. So anyway, so we had extras. So we put the next one. That one's really not.
So you can see it grows. Yeah, I will not argue that it's taller than the original Davy Poplar, but it's getting big.
It's getting big. And but Junior is getting up there toward its daddy. Davy Poplar the Third is not as tall as the other one.
So we've got coverage when Davy Poplar does go. We hope not anytime soon.
Right.
The other we talk some later time because we're almost out of time. But about trees in the other part of Chapel Hill, one of the interesting trees is a Davy Poplar the Third group that is in the old Presbyterian manse house on Franklin Street. This is the house that President Spangler purchased, but you can walk by that near the old library. The old library, the Chapel Hill Museum, is a specimen of that, and it's grown to be quite big.
Mm-hmm.
But, we've just got a minute or two. Why don't you just give us a list of your other, real quickly, your other favorite trees on campus and in town?
Oh, my God.
You can't cover them all, but just
I'll just list them. The big over 200-year-old male holly tree, double trunk male holly tree that's right there on McCorkle Place that's contemporary with Davy Poplar.
Original.
That was there, right? There's a whole story with the hollies. A former champion post oak that's right up there just real close to Person Hall between Person
and— Why do you say former champion?
Well, because it's not the champion now. It got the—
Somebody found a bigger one.
Yeah, down in Mississippi or Alabama.
But the biggest one in North Carolina.
Yes, I think so, definitely. Other favorite trees, well, definitely the catalpa tree that was saved, the northern catalpa tree that was saved right there by the tall Keenan Tower. Several years ago, that was going to be cut down, destroyed.
The
chemistry thing, right across from Coker Hall and just to the side of Wilson Library.
That was a big effort on the campus.
Right. You know, Jeffrey librarian at the botany department.
But it comes in bloom in early April or May.
It bloomed about 4 weeks ago, and now there's a southern poplar. I mean, a southern catalpa, and it's in full
flower.
The best specimen I know is as you're coming up Martin Luther King Boulevard, coming up just before you get to that Westminster Drive that goes back behind Timberline and the Timberline Cinemas. Look on the right as you're going north on Martin Luther King. And there's a sort of a big brick bungalow, and in the front yard, side yard, it's just huge, and it's in full flower right now. It's worth it. That's the Southern, and I didn't—
That's something new for
three,
you.
Yeah, three late. I learned something every time I start working on.
One of my favorite trees, maybe not one of yours, but is the California redwood tree. Columbia Street.
And right opposite a—
You like that? I mean, that's a plant from some other place. That's not really native to us. You're okay with that?
But you know what? Now, maybe somebody in this radio audience will have the answer. We have been, for years, trying to establish the story of who planted that tree.
Who planted the redwood tree in front of the Massengill Law offices on North Columbia Street?
And we have talked to
if
people.
If you know,
we have
what,
talked
will you,
to
what will you give them if they tell you?
We will interview them here on the radio.
A free tour.
And we'll write about them in Flora. that's a mystery.
All right. Well, that's
so many things in our heritage that we don't know. So we have to make up these stories. But
that's the challenge. And Ken Moore's given us lots of challenges. Thanks for sharing just a little bit of your knowledge and your spirit of love for our plants and the love that you have for all of us that you share in your column every week in the Carver Citizen. Thanks, Ken Moore. Thanks to all y'all for listening. This has been Who's Talking.